Imagine waking up to metal birds blocking the sunlight. Everybody trapped now, black clouds made it become night. In the Holy Land, how you got us living the slum life? My God, look at what it's become like. Mothers in Palestine gotta carry their sons twice. Never trusted y'all at the sleepover. The overseers build walls we can't see over. Freedom is a luxury afforded by freeloaders to put us in shallow graves and sheep in a deep coma. But thieves cannot be owners.
Metal Birds by Belly. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. For more on the Israeli attack on the Nusayrat refugee camp that freed four Israeli hostages and killed at least 274 Palestinians, wounding over about 700 people, we're joined by Omar Badar, a Palestinian-American political analyst, member of the National Policy Council of the Arab American Institute. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. If you can overall respond to what took place, and then, because you're in D.C., Omar, talk about the Biden administration response.
Sure. Amy, there's no question that what unfolded in that operation is a massacre. I mean, we've seen just the bodies of hundreds of people littered everywhere, including the bodies of children. We've seen absolutely horrific scenes at the hospitals of weeping parents and bloody children. I mean, to look at a death toll of this scale and then to celebrate this kind of operation as some sort of success, you would basically have to openly say that the lives of Israelis are more valuable than the lives of Palestinians. That is the message that is sent by celebrating this operation. Now, there is no surprise at the fact that an apartheid government like Israel's would see it that way. They've made very clear that they have absolutely no regard for Palestinian life, that they don't see Palestinians as equal human beings deserving of the same dignity and rights that Israelis enjoy. But what's really disappointing is looking at the way that the Biden administration has reacted to all this, where the massacre is reduced to a footnote while the focus is primarily on the lives of the hostages who had been rescued. That kind of contrast, this declaration from the Biden administration that the lives of Palestinians matter less than the lives of Israelis, is just absolutely outrageous and completely indefensible. It speaks to a fundamentally broken dynamic with American foreign policy towards the region for a very, very long time, in which Israel is treated like a country that is above the law and above any rules, and their lives simply matter more, and they can do whatever they want so long as it favors Israel at the expense of the people around them. And that kind of approach has actually guaranteed that we're going to be living in a situation of perpetual conflict. Because anytime you treat Palestinians the way Israel treats them, put them under indefinite military occupation, rob them of their rights, of their land, treat them the way Palestinians are treated day in and day out under this brutal occupation, you are creating fertile ground for conflict. And that's why we're in the situation that we're in the first place.
Omar, Jake Sullivan, the national security advisor, said on the Sunday talk shows, quote, innocent people were tragically killed in this operation. The exact number we don't know, but innocent people were killed, and that's heartbreaking. That's tragic.
Yeah. Amy, just imagine if it was the other way around, right? Imagine right now, as you and I are speaking, there are thousands of Palestinians who have been kidnapped out of Gaza. They're placed in Israeli detention centers across the border. And the treatment that they are witnessing day in and day out has been absolutely horrifying. There's a report in the New York Times from just a few days ago outlining the daily sexual abuse that these prisoners are actually undergoing, the torture. And we know for a fact that dozens of Palestinians have been killed in Israeli captivity over the past several months since October 7th to this day. And if you were to imagine a scenario right now in which Hamas conducts an operation, kills several hundred Israelis, and then rescues four Palestinians from Israeli detention, would anybody even know the names of those four Palestinians who have been rescued? Or would the entire world and our discourse be condemning the massacre that had taken place? Would that be what's dominating the headlines? We know the answer to that, and we know that we would not be reducing the massacre to nothing had it been the other way around. So yes, maybe Jake Sullivan can talk about how tragic it is that people are dying, but when push comes to shove, the United States is providing the military funding that is allowing for these casualties to occur on a regular basis. At this point, every major human rights organization in the world is describing Israeli conduct in Gaza as war crimes. They are describing the deliberate starving of children. Several of them have died of starvation as well. We are witnessing that the International Court of Justice is effectively has found that Israel is plausibly committing genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. And in light of all this, for the Biden administration to continue providing unlimited and unconditional military funding for Israel to carry on this genocidal slaughter in Gaza while expressing regret at the fact that some civilians are dying in the process, I mean, just who are they fooling? They are responsible for it in a direct way. If they do find it tragic, there is a very, very easy solution to it, and that is to put an end to U.S. military funding for Israel until Israel starts abiding by international law and stops this indiscriminate onslaught on the civilian population in Gaza.
I want to go to President Biden during a joint press conference with the French President Macron on Saturday.
But before I begin my remarks, I want to echo President Macron's comments welcoming the safe rescue of four hostages that were returned to their families in Israel. We won't stop working until all the hostages come home and a ceasefire is reached. That is essential to happen.
So what about this ceasefire? What about this deal? What about Israel and Hamas? The U.S. focuses on Hamas, whether they will accept the deal. President Biden introduced it as an Israeli deal, and yet Netanyahu has not approved this deal.
Amy, I think it's really important for your audience to actually understand a bit of the merits of that ceasefire proposal. There has long been tension between the Israeli position, which is effectively a temporary ceasefire, a return of all the hostages of this onslaught on Gaza that has so far killed nearly 40,000 people and just destroyed the overwhelming majority of the Gaza Strip. And the Hamas position, on the other hand, they're saying they're willing to give up the hostages, but they need an end to this onslaught. They want a permanent ceasefire. And the proposal that Biden put forward effectively presents two phases. Phase one is a temporary ceasefire, and phase two is the permanent one. And in between, he's left it vague about what needs to be negotiated in order to get to the permanent ceasefire bit. And Netanyahu, I mean, both sides are suspicious for different reasons, right? Hamas is suspicious of that kind of deal because they're afraid they're going to be forced to give up nearly all the hostages at phase one, and then the war is simply going to continue. And from Netanyahu's perspective, he's worried that when the war is halted in that temporary ceasefire, that the U.S. is going to apply significant pressure on Netanyahu to turn it into a permanent ceasefire. Now, Netanyahu immediately came out and effectively rejected any idea that the Biden plan is going to end the war because he said all Israel has offered is a plan that allows us to continue this war until Hamas is completely destroyed. So he's effectively openly rejected that deal. And the Biden administration, as it always does, then turns around and applies all the pressure that they want to on the Palestinian side. Now they're trying to pressure Qatar into potentially throwing out Hamas, the Hamas leadership out of Qatar if they don't accept that deal. So time and again, we see this pattern where when push comes to shove, the Biden administration is unwilling to apply any meaningful pressure on Israel. They threatened it here and there. They talk about potentially withholding some weapons. And the second there's any bit of criticism of the Biden administration from right-wing politicians and, frankly, some establishment mainstream ones about how Biden is not backing Israel sufficiently, Biden immediately panics and just throws another unlimited supply of weapons in Israel and says that Israel can do whatever it wants. That dynamic is not going to lead to anything positive. We can't get an end to this onslaught if Biden is afraid to apply meaningful pressure on Netanyahu or on Israel. That has long been the core of the issue. By the way, not just in reference to this particular ceasefire effort, but it really is about the broader dynamic of Israel and the United States, where the impunity that Israel enjoys to continue this occupation, to entrench the occupation in the West Bank and in Gaza, and the fact that Biden has always offered unconditional diplomatic support and unconditional military support, that allows extremism to fester within the Israeli government. And that's what pushes their policies in a more and more extreme direction, where there is no possibility right now for a genuine, long-lasting, just peace, because the Israeli government rejects that completely out of hand. And the only thing that can change that is a shift in American approach and to start saying that America will not be complicit in these kinds of atrocities, will not be complicit in entrenching apartheid and occupation, because that is not a recipe for a stable region or for any kind of long-lasting peace or justice.
Omar Badar, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Palestinian-American political analyst, member of the National Policy Council of the Arab American Institute. When we come back, we'll be joined by two Israelis. One near Tel Aviv lost his parents on October 7th. He says Israel's war is not the answer. The other here in New York is the head of idealist.org. Back in 20 seconds.
Well, I think it's fine building jumbo planes, taking a ride on a cosmic train. Switch on summer from a slot machine. Just get what you want to if you want, 'cause you can get anything. I know we've come a long way, we're changing day to day. But tell me, where do the children play?
Where do the children play? By Yusuf Islam, used to be formerly known as Cat Stevens. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Israelis celebrated the return of the four Israeli hostages in Saturday's raid. The four hostages, Noah Agamani, Almag Meirjan, Andrei Kozlov, and Shlomo Ziv, were all in good medical condition. Just hours after the rescue, thousands of Israelis gathered in Tel Aviv and throughout Israel to protest Prime Minister Netanyahu's government, calling for a deal to free the remaining hostages. Some 120 hostages remain in Gaza, with 43 known dead. 105 hostages were released in a week-long ceasefire deal in November. Only three other hostages have been freed by military force since the start of the war. Another three were mistakenly killed by Israeli forces after they escaped on their own. Hamas says others have been killed in Israeli airstrikes. Meanwhile, the Biden administration's pushing for a deal announced by President Biden over a week ago that sets forth a phased plan for a ceasefire and the release of hostages. Biden described the plan as an Israeli proposal, but Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has publicly questioned it, particularly its call for the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza and a lasting truce. Hamas has demanded international guarantees that the war will end. For more, we're joined by two guests. In Binyamina, near Tel Aviv, we're joined by Mao Zinon. He lost both of his parents, Bilha and Yaakovi Inon, in the Hamas attack on October 7th. He has called for the Israeli assault on Gaza to end. Inon wrote an article for Al Jazeera titled, "Hamas Killed My Parents, But Israel's War Is Not the Answer." And joining us here in New York, Amidar, an Israeli social entrepreneur. He's the executive director of idealist.org. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Maoz, let's begin with you. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Can you first respond to what took place this weekend in Nuseirat, the freeing of the four hostages and the killing of over 270 Palestinians by Israeli forces?
Yeah. Amy, thank you for inviting me to speak with you and in your show. I've been listening from the beginning of the show about the equation of death. It's the equation of the devil. Four Israeli hostages equal to 270 casualties, Palestinian casualties. We are all human. No human, no Israelis, no Palestinian, not my parents, no one on planet Earth deserves to be part of this equation. No one. And we must implement a new equation, the equation of life. And this is what I'm saying. Since losing my parents, that the only way to bring the hostages back is by a deal. All hostages in exchange for all Palestinian prisoners. 8 months have passed and we lost so many lives. So many life of the hostages, so many Palestinian life. And there is no meaning. There is no meaning and no excuse, a justification for the suffering, for the pain, for the agony we are facing and living through. And what I'm afraid and what I'm crying for is that it might be only the beginning. It might be only the beginning, and we might face the numbers we already forgot from Rwanda. 1 million people were genocide, were killed in a period of 3 months in Rwanda. And it took the world 3 months to wake up and to act. And I cannot understand what will make the world to act. Only a number of million victims between the river and the sea? I already lost my parents. And I don't want no human being to be in the position I am. And we must stop it, and we must start a new phase in humanity, that we are not solving conflicts through war, through bloodshed, through revenge, but we resolve conflicts through dialogue, through envisioning a better future, deciding and agreeing on the values of the future, our common ground as humans. We all deserve better. We all deserve better, and we must make the future better than what we've been going through now.
So, Maoz, can you tell us about what's happening across the country, across Israel? You have these mass protests over the weekend before and after the hostages were released. Thousands of Israelis calling for Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire. They're hit by water cannons. There were over 30 arrested. Can you talk about what this movement is about? And also, Benny Gantz quitting the war cabinet. What meaning does this have?
Okay. I'm not a political analyst. I'm a peace activist. I lost my parents. And I believe that peace is possible. I know that peace is possible. And this is what me and my partners, Palestinian Israeli partners, are working on now, day and night, to bring peace to this land. But I would start by differentiating between the Israeli government and the Israeli people. The Israeli government has been working now for decades into achieving one goal, is a Jewish / Israeli supremacy between the river and the sea, through settlements, through occupation, through oppressioning the Palestinian people within Israel, and in the West Bank in Gaza. And while this is what the government wants to do and acting on to execute it, the Israeli people want security and safety. The Israeli people are traumatized. I traumatized from October 7th, and I can take it back in history. The Israeli people are still traumatized from the Holocaust. It's an ongoing trauma that we are facing again and again. And we must cure the Israeli people. And at the same time, of course, we must cure and take in accountability the Palestinian people, because there will be no security and safety to one without the other. So how can we cure? How can we cure our people? And this is what on stake. And while the protests or guns, again, they are calling for a deal. This is the people on the street are calling for a deal, because more and more Israelis do understand that the safest and most humanitarian way to release the hostages without risking no one's, Israelis and Palestinians alike, is a deal. But it's in the against the interest of the government. Because if, like your reporters' analysis said before, because if the hostages will be back home, then the government will need to deal with the day after. And they don't care about the day after. They want the day after to look like the present. They want the bloodshed, the revenge, the war and the fear to continue, because it serves them in the greater mission of Jewish-Israeli supremacy between the river and the sea. And this is why the world must act. The world cannot wait. it's not, it's time not to, for talks or for speeches. It's time for action, to stop the war immediately, to make a deal, all hostages in exchange for all Palestinian prisoners, and start working to build a better future. We must envision a peaceful future between the river and the sea, and building a roadmap to make it happen. So, because our leaders are not doing it, because of lack of leadership, and Gantz is just an example of a politician that has no political imagination. He believes only in force, in military respond to whatever circumstance or situation it is. But this is not what we need here. We need a political imagination to envision a better future, a diplomatic solution, like Israel knew how to do in the past with Jordan and with Egypt. And those are the only borders where we have security and safety.
We've been speaking with Maoz Inon, who lost both of his parents, Bilha and Yaakovi, on October 7th, wrote the article, "Hamas killed my parents, but Israel's war is not the answer." In New York, we're joined by Ami Dar, executive director of Idealist.org, also an Israeli. I'm wondering if you, too, can respond to what happened this weekend, how it's been portrayed in the United States. And Ben-Gavir, who's now that Benny Gantz has quit the war cabinet, saying he wants to be put into the war cabinet, saying this freeing of the four hostages, Hamas says three others, including an American, were killed. But Ben-Gavir says this shows that the rescue operation means that military pressure, not a deal, is how to free hostages. Ami.
Well, good morning, Ami. Thanks for having me. First, I just want to say that I'm in awe of Maoz Inon. I think he's been one of my moral hero since this started. I think having your parents murdered and then working for peace, I'm in awe of him and of people like him in Gaza who are in the same situation, who have lost their families, and they keep talking about peace. I think they're the true heroes here. I think that, like everyone who spoke here so far, it was in the morning when I heard that the four hostages had been rescued a few minutes after it happened. So obviously there's a feeling of relief for the families of those people and for the four people themselves. This is not taken. And so it was wonderful that they went back. As the day progressed and the news came out of you know, the scope of the operation and the number of people who had been died and wounded, I was progressively horrified the whole day. But then this is part, I think, as Maoz was saying, this is part of the last 8 months. I mean, I think that you know, on October 10th, I went on Twitter and I said, you know, revenge is not a strategy. And I grieve for their kids as much as I grieve for ours. And our tears, you know, taste the same and our blood is the same color. I mean, that has to be the approach, which is why people like Maoz and people like me have been calling for what's been called in Israel an all-for-all exchange from the very, very beginning. The very first week, Israel should have acknowledged, look, we lost this round, basically. And now we have to pay the price. And the price is life comes first. Life always comes first. Let's get all the hostages back. And if that means that every single detainee and prisoner, Palestinians in Israeli prisons, is released, then so be it. Life comes first. That's been my position from the very beginning, and it's still my position now. And, you know, when you say these things, you get attacked from sort of every side. It doesn't change it. And I think what pains me the most is that this will end with a deal. We all know this. We've all been around. This will end with a deal. And I keep thinking, Emmy, you and I are both old enough. I remember, you know, John Kerry testifying in Congress in the early 70s and saying, you know, how do you tell the last man to die that he died for a mistake? And who will be the last Israeli, last Palestinian to die hours before this deal gets made? Because there will be a deal. So do the deal. Just get it done. Both Sinwar in Gaza and Netanyahu in Israel, just do the damn deal. Sorry, I'm not a professional. I'm just here. Sorry for using that word. I'm also not representing Idealists. I'm just representing myself. But just do the deal. Get it done. Get everyone home, Palestinians and Israelis.
And what do you think of Netanyahu being invited by the U.S. Congress, by the House Speaker, but also the man who criticized him, Chuck Schumer? It might have surprised many that he did criticize Netanyahu, but he did. But now you have Hakeem Jeffries, Schumer, House Speaker Johnson, all inviting him to give an address to a joint session of Congress.
Yeah, I think I understand why they're doing it, in the sense that I think they're doing it as, you know, I have a 4-year-old at home, and I know that if I give her a piece of chocolate, she may do something that I want her to do. I think they're trying to offer him a very big piece of chocolate to try to get him to do what they want him to do. I think, let me start from the end, it would be absolutely disgraceful for him to address Congress without a deal having been done already. I mean, that would be honestly insane. Without him saying that he is for a deal, without actually him saying that he's for the whole deal that Biden is proposing, which is this whole two-state solution, you know, the whole thing. Having him there without that, I think, is going to be a disgrace. And I also suspect it's going to be a disaster for him. I don't think that the whole of Congress will just take this quietly. I think this is not going to end well if it's done without actually something to celebrate.
And Maoz, the significance of President Biden, and I'll ask you this question, Ami, as well, promising Israel now something like $1 billion of military weapons as this assault continues and intensifies in Gaza?
And support Israel can receive. Israel need to receive an aid to be cured from our trauma, reconciliation aid, shared future and peace aid. We don't need more military weapon. We don't need to have our bunkers supplied with bombs. And I want to again, Ami, it's a pleasure and honor to be with you in the same panel. And what I realized, and I believe now, is that the only war which is won is war which leads to peace. And Israel, I'm afraid to say, lost all its wars under the prime minister of Benjamin Netanyahu. He's the worst leader Israel ever had, and probably the worst leader the Jewish people ever had. And we must stop his position, and we must start a new leadership. And if we need the assistance and the aid of the American people, of both Congress and Senate, from the Republicans and the Democratic Party, to support us to win a war after 30 years of defeats. And to win a war means to make peace. This is the only way for the future. This is what we deserve, and we are not going to compromise again on a ceasefire. We are not going to compromise for anything less than a lasting peace.
And Ami, if you can, in this last 30 seconds we have, you're here in the United States, you're an Israeli, address both audiences.
I think that the single, in 30 seconds, I think anyone who's outside of the whole region who wants to actually see peace win. I don't think it's possible for Israel to win. I don't think Palestinians can win. I think only peace can win. Any side winning, in quotes, means the whole region loses. Only peace can win. And so do whatever you can to support those people on both sides across the region who are doing what they can to get people together. Anything bringing people together is good. Anything pulling people apart is bad. Support those who are trying to make people come together, and maybe we come out of this. Maybe. I'm not optimistic.
Ami Dar, executive director of Idealist.org, and Maoz Inan lost both his parents in the October 7th attack, calling for peace. Also, many of his friends. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, this is Jesse Brown, the host of Canada Land, Canada's only media criticism program. Every week, I talk to some of the most interesting people in the country about some of the things that matter most. We talk about the news media, about comedy, film, music, and politics. And you can now listen on CJSF 90.1 FM every Monday at 5 p.m. Wait for it.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.